Morning, everyone. Let's get underway. Today's daf is daf Chav Zayin. Okay, so what I'd like to do today is I'd like to finish the parak. We're still back on the seventh parak. We're back on Chav Hey Amud Beis with the Mishnah. So what I'd like to cover today is basically the last sugya. The two more sugyas to go in the seventh parak of Erechin. Okay, leaving us tomorrow to start from the eighth parak. He gives Yovel Velon Igala. Okay, so you have an ancestral field. We're talking about now Steachuza. We've been talking about Steachuza since the beginning of the seventh parak. And you have till Yovel to redeem your property. In other words, you consecrate your property. It now is under the hands of the Gizbar. And you have till Yovel. What if you don't redeem it at Yovel? So we already know the conclusion, but the Mishnah here talks about precisely what's going to happen. So according to Rav Yehuda, Kohanim come, and Kohanim are in fact going to assume ownership of the property, but the Kohanim need to pay money. The Kohanim cannot just simply come in and just simply take, but they have to take it, they have to take money. Now, we talked about this yesterday. Any Kohanim? No. The answer is not any Kohen, but specifically the Kohen that's working in the Mishmar at the time, meaning we spoke about this at length a number of times. Kohanim have a cycle, a rotation of 24 mishmaros, and each week a different mishmar serves in the Beis HaMikdash. That mishmar is basically entitled to any activity that goes on that day in the Beis HaMikdash, all karbanos, anything. And it happens to be that particular mishmar who's working in the Beis HaMikdash in the beginning of the Yovel year, so they're going to get all the fields that were consecrated by their owner and went unredeemed. Okay, so for them, that's an amazing windfall. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, they don't just get the land. There has to be a redemption. They have to pay for the land. And Rabbi Shimon Amar, Nichnasim V'lo Nosnim. Now Rabbi Shimon says they walk in and they don't even have to give money, meaning matana, it's a total gift. Well, the Gemara is going to discuss what the machlokus is between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Okay, that is two opinions in the Mishnah. Let's bring down a third. Rabbi Lazar Omer lo nichnasim lo nosim ela nikres sdei retushim. Rabbi Lazar says nothing happens at Yovel, meaning according to Rabbi Lazar, I need a redeemer. Somebody has to come and redeem the land, either the original owner, somebody else. And if somebody else comes and redeems the land, so then it goes to the Kohanim in Yovel. But if there is no action that takes place to that field before Yovel, so the field is left as a sdei retush, an abandoned field. What does that mean? Meaning you're just not going to call it a name. It simply means we're going to wait. Adi Yovel Sheni. We're going to wait till the second Yovel. Yigil Yovel Sheni v'lo nigal nikras retushim retushim. Now we are holding by 50 years later. 50 years later, nobody does anything with that land. I don't know. People, for whatever reason, people are scared of that land. So now 50 years later, and nobody's claimed it. Nobody has redeemed it. It's now abandoned. Retushim retushim. Adi Yovel Sheni. When do Kohanim get it in Yovel? That's only if somebody redeems it. Now, later on, one of the last things we'll be discussing this morning is after the first Yovel, according to Rabbi Lazar, right, who says that you need an action. After the first Yovel, what if the original owner comes and redeems it? Right? The one who consecrated it, right? The one whose land it was to stay Achuza. What if he comes and redeems it after Yovel? Is he still have the ability to claim it back as a steachuza, according to Rabbi Lazar? That will be a discussion that we're going to have later on this morning. So essentially now, in the Mishnah, there are three opinions about what happens to a steachuza, an ancestral land that was consecrated, and what happens to it in Yovel. So we have three opinions, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Eliezer. So the first thing we're going to do is formulate an explanation for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon says it goes to the Kohanim at Yovel, whether it is or isn't redeemed. Mind you, this only is true if the original owner didn't redeem it. If the original owner redeemed it, obviously he's going to get back his ancestral rights. But if the original owner didn't redeem it, even if nobody redeemed it, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say, it goes to the Kohanim of that Mishmar of Yovel. My Tama, to Rabbi Yehuda, the only point of disagreement between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon is whether or not they have to pay money. So my Tama, to Rabbi Yehuda, Gamar Kodesh Kodesh Mei Maktish Bias. So Rabbi Yehuda learns Gzeira Shava specifically from someone who's makdish his house. Ma'alahala medamim, mafkam medamim. Now, when it comes to a house doesn't just simply go free. House has to be redeemed with money. So if the house needs to be redeemed with money, we'll talk about this later on in the Masechta, so too, that field also has to be redeemed with money. Rabbi Shimon Gamar, Kodesh, Kodesh, Mikivsei Atzeres. And Rabbi Shimon says, no, I'll show you another Kodesh in Chumash, and that's the Kvastim, the two sheep that are brought on Shavuos. Malahalan Bechinam, Avkan Bechinam. Now, when the Kohanim work the base of Mikdash on Shavuos, so do they have to pay for the Kivsei Atzeres? No. That's part of the entitlements of being a Kohen. So this too is part of the entitlements of being a Kohen. You just simply get the land. Rabbi Huda Nami Nelef Mikivsei Atzeres Dan in Kachi Berek Habayis Mikachi Berek Habayis Ve'ein Dan in Kachi Berek Habayis Mikachi Mizbeach. Now, as far as Rabbi Huda, he doesn't like that approach. He doesn't like to direct it to Kivsei Atzeres because Kivsei Atzeres is not Berek Habayis, meaning that's Kedusha Saguf. So you can't compare a field to something which is offered on the Mizbeach. And Rabbi Shimon Nami Nelef Mimakish Bayis Dan in Davar Shematan LaKohanim, Midavar Shematan LaKohanim, Ein Dan in Davar Shematan LaKohanim, Midavar She'ino Matana LaKohanim. So the Gemara says, yeah, and Rabbi Shimon, why doesn't he side with Rabbi Huda? Because the house that was consecrated, yes, it's true the Kohen gets it, but it's not an entitlement. Meaning the Kohen doesn't just simply say, is not awarded with it. If the Kohen were to pay for it, then the Kohen's going to get it. But it's not a matana, it's not an entitlement. Kivsei Atzeres, that's an entitlement. And Steachuza, that's an entitlement. So I'd rather, even though Kivsei Atzeres Kedusha Saguf, not Kedusha Berek Habayis, but still it's an entitlement, I'll compare the entitlements of the Kohen rather than talk about bias, which is not an entitlement. Okay. That is up until now the machlokus between Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon. Okay. We move on to Rabbi Elazar, this entire blot of Gemara, side A and side B, is dedicated to the discussion of Rabbi Elazar. It's interesting. It's not the accepted position, but in the Mishnah, but nevertheless, though, it's of interest, and the Gemara will spend a lot of time. Side B, Chav Vav Amud Beis, is going to be a lot of review and repeat. So you didn't get it the first time. You may get it the second time. Rabbi Elazar Omer Lo Nichnasim Lo Nosim Amar Rabba My Time Under Rabbi Elazar. Because the question is very simple, but it's really going to occupy our entire morning. What's behind Rabbi Elazar? Let's review. According to Rabbi Elazar, when somebody consecrates his own ancestral field and nobody redeems it, so it stays. It's in a holding pattern. The field now is called Retushim, and that will continue in perpetuity. That will go for the first Yovel, the second Yovel. Centuries can go by, and this field will go just simply lay fallow. Nobody claims ownership to it. So what's behind it? What's behind the idea of Rebbe Elazar? I'm a Rebbe, my time is a Rebbe Elazar, I'm a Krah. V'im lo yigal asada, lo yigal od. V'im machar asada, v'ayah asada, b'tzei so b'yovel. So the Rebbe starts off by quoting the Pasuk, Chav Zayin, Per Chav Zayin, right? Parshas b'chukosai. If the field is not redeemed, lo yigal od. The imachar es hasada, but if the field is sold, the hayah hasada b'tseis b'yovel, then it will go out in yovel. Meaning there has to be a sale action taking place to the land in order for it to go out in yovel. So Amar Abayis says to Rava, look, that's good, but you really dissected the pasuk. Meaning if you read the pasuk as a simple flow, the pasuk is not talking about that there has to be an action sale. Sakina charifa. Mafseke cry, you take out a knife and you're cutting up a pasuk, meaning that's not the simple pshan the pasuk. Elam Rabbi, time of the Rebbe Elazar, Kedetanya. So the Gemara is going to offer now another explanation for Rebbe Elazar. Lo yigael. If the pasuk says regarding the original owner may not redeem. Yachol, lo te nigal shetehilafan of kiste mikna. Now, I might have thought, look, after Yovel, meaning let's go over the storyline, okay, you got to follow the timeline. He owned a steachuza, right? It was his ancestral field. He consecrated the ancestral field. Then comes Yovel, and that means that in Yovel, it goes out to the Kohanim. But remember, according to Rabbi Elazar, it only can go out to the Kohanim only if somebody came along and redeemed it. If the original owner redeemed it, obviously it goes back to him. What we're talking about now is somebody else comes along and redeems it. Somebody else comes along and redeems it. So at that first Yovel, it goes now to the Kohanim. Good. Now that it goes to the Kohanim, so now we're after the first Yovel. The original owner says, you know what? I'm sorry, one more step in this timeline. The Kohen himself consecrates the field. Okay? Like, in other words, he received the benevolence from the Beis HaMikdash. He's got a field. He's like, you know what? I'll follow good with good. So he goes ahead and consecrates the field to, and he gives it back now to the Gizbar. The original owner now says, you know what? I really missed that field. I like that field. I missed that field. You might have thought, as a Havamina, he can't even go back in and purchase the field from the Gizbar, even as a purchaser. Meaning we understand that he lost his entitlements as the original, as an original owner, as an ancestral field. But I might have thought, this is a Havamina of the Gemara, that Lo Yigael means he can't even buy it back as a stay mikna. Lo tehei nigel shetehei lefanav kistei mikna tamalomar od. So that's what you have to read into the word od. Lo yigael od. Meaning no longer is he considered the owner as a stay achuza, but if he wants to come in and purchase the field at a later point in time, that he can do. Lechmosha haisei nigel shetehei nigel shetehei lefanav kistei mikna. Now, good. We are now describing a scenario in which the original owner is no longer the original owner. He has lost his rights to an ancestral field. And so therefore, when he comes and he buys it back, he's simply buying it back now as a regular purchaser. Now, Amos, how did this happen? Meaning, I already filled out the timeline. The Gemara now is going to do exactly that. Fill out the timeline. So the Gemara says, if we're talking about within that first Yovel, so what do you mean? If he buys it back in that first Yovel, he's back. Meaning he regained his status as the owner of a Stei Achuza. So the Gemara says we're talking about Yovel Sheni. Ulaman. Now, Yovel Sheni, that means that we already went through a Yovel. Now, Elim, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, Kohanim Nafka. Now the Gemara says, I don't understand. According to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, it goes to the Kohanim, Ella love Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara assumes that we're talking about Rabbi Eliezer, and that means that according to Rabbi Eliezer, he went in after the first Yovel, even though he has lost it in terms of being an owner, he can buy back as a purchaser. And this is a source for Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara does not enjoy this source as well. Vitizbara. Does this make any sense? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, I owed my Darshibe. Because look, that was all well and good, but you have two other Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. What are they going to do with the word owed? Meaning they realize that the Pasuk says, Lo Yigael owed. So how are they going to do it? Elahacha b'may iskina. So the Gemara says, we're going to understand the Braisa like this. So the land went to the Kohanim, right? For that first Yovel. Again, he, the original owner, consecrated the land. Somebody else came along and redeemed it. It now goes to the Kohanim and Yovel. After Yovel comes along, let me start again. Original owner had the field. He consecrated the land. Somebody else came along and redeems the land. So that means that in that first Yovel, it goes to the Kohanim. The Kohanim who got it consecrated the land after Yovel. Then, Shiatzu Kohanim vihigdisha Kohen v'asu balim lemifrika. And along comes the original owner, and he says, you know what? Let me redeem it from Yovel. Let me redeem it from the Gizbar. This is after the first Yovel. Salkadatcha amina lo tifrok shetehei lefanav kistei mikna. I might have thought that he can't even come in as a purchaser. Period. He can at least come in with the rights of a purchaser. Okay? This is what we're going to call, from this point forward, Braisa number one. Okay? I know it's a fancy title. Okay. Braisa, very fancy. Braisa number one basically describes the following scenario. Okay? I know it's a long timeline. It's a little bit complicated, but just make sure that we're clear about Braisa number one. Braisa number one has him, the original owner, consecrating his land. Then somebody else, not him, coming and redeeming it. Okay, that means that now when Yovel comes, that's it. He loses it. Had he redeemed it himself, he would have retained his ancestral rights. Okay, somebody else redeemed it, so that means in Yovel he loses it. Now let's assume not like Rabbi Eliezer. Let's assume now like Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon. what happens in that first Yovel? It goes now to the Kohanim. Good. Now that it goes to the Kohanim, Kohanim enjoy that field. So they can do whatever they want. It's their field. What they do is that they consecrate the field. Okay? What do the Kohanim need the land for? Anyway. Okay, they consecrate the field. And now the original owner, the one who owned it a Yovel ago, the original owner now comes in and says, you know what? He goes over to the Gizmar and he says, let me buy back. Now, he already lost his ancestral rights. What the Gemara is suggesting as a Havamina, the first Brisa is, not only can he not redeem it as an ancestral possessor of the land, he can't even redeem it as a purchaser. Meaning, I'd like to just lease it from now until the next Yovel. I might have thought, as a Havamina, he can't even do that. Kamash Malan, the Chiddush is, no, that he can do. Okay. It's a purchase. Right, that's exactly the point. Meaning, he's not redeeming it. It's not redeeming it so that he could regain his ancestral rights. He lost it. That first Yovel, he lost it. All it's coming to say is that for that second Yovel cycle, he can at least lease the land. Okay. This is all Brisa number one. And so therefore, if you're following, which I'm not even sure if I am, but if you're following, we no longer have a source for Rabbi Elazar. We brought in this entire Brisa to try to explain the position of Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar is of the opinion that in order for something to happen to Yovel, to this land, you need a sale action, meaning if no sale action takes place, it does not go to the Kohanim. What we have done with this Brisa now is basically say, we tried to bring it as a support for Rabbi Elazar, but now what we've done, giving this intricate scenario, is basically say, no, this Brisa is not speaking to Rabbi Elazar, this Brisa is speaking on behalf of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, in that it goes to the Kohanim, even if there is no action sale. All right, so what does it mean that we're talking about the original owner? So we constructed this intricate scenario. So what we failed to do now is really give a pasuk for Rabbi Elazar. V'ha-tanya. I lost my place. I'm sorry. V'ha-tanya. Okay, I'm back. And the Gemara now quotes a brisa. Now usually v'ha-tanya is the Gemara is asking a question. But the Gemara is not going to ask a question over here. The Gemara is going to support exactly what we just said. In the Yovel year, the land will return la asher kano mito from the purchaser. What? Who's this pasuk referring to? Yachol lachzor legizbar shalachu mimenu tamalam la asher lo achuzes haaretz. So I might have thought it's going to go back to the gizbar, but the pasuk says no. It la asher lo achuzes haaretz. Whoever has the ancestral rights of the land. Yomel asher lo achuzes haaretz matamalam la asher kano mito. So then, if that's true, so let the pasuk just simply say, La shalom chuzas haaretz. Why is it talking about the purchaser? Shiyatza lekohanim, umachra kohen. I'm sorry, lasher kohanim mito, sada shiyatza lekohanim. So now the Gemara is going to talk now, and we're calling this Brisa number two. Now, Brisa number two is going to be similar to Brisa number one, but a different scenario. The scenario over here goes like this. Yatza lekohanim. The land went to the kohanim in Yovel, meaning the original owner consecrated the land. He did not redeem it before Yovel. So that means Yovel comes around now, and it's given to the Kohanim of that Mishmar. Umachra Kohen. Now, what did the Kohen do with that land? First of all, he could do whatever he wants. It's his land. So the Kohen sold the land. V'higdisha lokeach. Now, the owner of that land, okay, are we following the timeline over here? We are now in that second Yovel. The original Kohen, not the original Kohen, sorry. The Kohen who was granted the land in Yovel decides now to sell it to somebody else. This buyer says, you know what? I'm going to be Makdish the land. So how, when he's Makdish the land, how is he Makdish the land? As a, not a stay achuza, but rather as a stay mikna. Okay. We'll learn later on. We haven't really touched on the issue of stay mikna. We've been talking at length about stay achuza. When you consecrate a stay mikna, what are you consecrating? Not really the land, because you don't own the land. Ein adam makdish davar she'eino shelo. It's not your ancestral field to be makdish. All you're being makdish really is the value of that land. So if a person's makdish a stay mikna, it goes back to the owner. So v'yikdish lo koech v'gala, I'm sorry. Umachra koen v'yikdish lo koech v'gala acher. Now, after this person consecrated the land, someone else redeemed it. Yachol. Okay, now, I know this is intricate, and I know the storyline is complex over here. But if you're following, by when we get now to that second Yovel, this land is rebounding. Meaning this land now is going to be boomeranged back to its owner. Now, if you follow the long history of this land, you realize there are two separate people that we could point to as the land's owner. We can go all the way back before the first Yovel and say, you know, this land was owned originally by somebody who had ancestral rights to this land. On the other hand, however, he lost his ancestral right, meaning he consecrated the land, the original owner, and then the land went to the Kohanim. So the Kohanim are considered now the owner after the first Yovel. So when we get to that second Yovel, and we've created a scenario where this land is now going back to its original owner, there are really two candidates in terms of who can go back to. The Kohen who got it after the first Yovel, or we can go even further back to the original owner. So I might have thought, let's bring it all the way back to the original owner. No. When that second Yovel comes around, it goes to the Kohen. And let me start last. So Talmud Lomar, I'm sorry, first wide line of the page. Ayachol Tachzor LaBalim HaRishonim. I might have thought that's going to go back to Balim HaRishonim. Talmud Lomar LaSher Kanahu Meito. So the pasuk says LaSher Kanahu Meito. It goes back to the one who was Kone. Who was the one who was Kone? The Kohen after the first Yovel. Okay. Both of these brises are a little bit intricate. Second brisa, I think, is more intricate than the first brisa. But the point basically is like this. According to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, if an owner consecrates the field, the ancestral owner consecrates the field, and Yovel comes around, he loses it. He loses it permanently. Forever. The only thing we could be talking about definitely, is that if he wants to, after Yovel, he can lease it from the Beis HaMikdash, or from the Kohanim, I should say. But that's it though. He's no longer the owner. Brisa number one illustrated scenario. Brisa number two illustrated scenario. But both really are essentially making the same point. That you, once Yovel comes around, and once you don't redeem your field, you lose it forever. The itzterich lo yigael, the itzterich lemichtav, lasher kanah. Now the Gemara says, now we just had two brisas, each one depicting a different scenario. But essentially, as complicated each scenario is, each one is basically making the same point. So the Gemara now wants to know, why do I need both brisos? Because in the scenario of Lo Yigael, that's brisa number one, the Lo Kahadri Klal. You see, over there in that scenario, that land never rebounded. Meaning that land was never in a situation where it's got to go back to its original owner. But in scenario number two, remember in scenario number two, the Kohanim sold it. The buyer of that land consecrated the field. Somebody else came along and redeemed it. So now we have a scenario where by Yovel 2, it's going to go back. So without that second brisa, I might have thought, as long as the land's going back to its original owner, let's go back. Meaning let's go back to even pre-Yovel, pre-Yovel 1. And let it go back to the original owner. So that's what the Lasher Kano is coming to teach me, that once the first Yovel comes and goes, that original owner loses his rights to the ancestral field forever. Good. Next question. Because Rachman Lasher Kano Deloka Yahi Balim Dame. Avahachadika Yahive Dame Takeum Biyadayu. In Brisa number one, there's an aspect that you don't see in Brisa number two. Because what happened in Brisa number one? So again, original owner consecrated the land. The land went unredeemed. So Yovel comes along. It now goes to the Kohanim. The Kohanim consecrate the field. The field goes to the Gizbar. The original owner comes along and says, you know what? I'll redeem it from you. And he gives money and he redeems it. Now I might have thought, wait a second, let's think about it. He was the original owner. We're now in the scenario where the land belongs to the Gizbar, and he's paying money to redeem it. So you know what? Let's make a suggestion that he now becomes, again, the ancestral owner to that field. That's the Kasa Rechmano Lo Yigael. That's what the Torah is coming to teach us with Lo Yigael. meaning once Yovel comes along, he is no longer the original owner. Even in a scenario where it's back into the hands of the Gizbar, back into the hands of Bedek Abayis, and he's redeeming it with his own money, nevertheless, he's no longer considered the ancestral owner of that field.
But now he's very old. So.
and he's considerably older. The ikas of Rachman, yeah, understood, by the way. In other words, when you person consecrates his field, I mean, it's amazing because he really loses that aspect. He may lose it. The ikas of Rachman, lo yiga el velo kas of od, hav amin lo tifer klal kas of Rachman, o lechmosh aysayin in negelis, av al negelis, shetehe lefan of kistei mikna. And what's the ode? Meaning, that's a lo yiga el. But the pasuk says, lo yiga el ode. What's the ode coming to teach me? Ode is coming to teach me that he can't regain his ancestral rights to the field, but at least he can lease the land if he'd like to from the Gizbar, like anybody else. Okay, good. That's an entire Amud of Gemara. What the Gemara was trying to do over there is find a source for Rabbi Elazar. If you'll notice, the Gemara has not successfully done that, because even though we brought in the Braisa of Lo Yigael, we brought in the Braisa of Me'asher Kanahu, both Braisas ended up supporting the position of Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, and each one of them was there to teach us an aspect of the original owner is no longer the original owner. It means once Yovel comes along, we say to the original owner, we can construct so many different scenarios where we might have thought, you may get it back, you're never going to get it back. Meaning Yovel comes along and the land was left, and you didn't redeem the land before Yovel, you lose it, period. But both of those brises were supporting Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. So what we have failed to do now is support the position of Rabbi Elazar. So, my Havi Allah. So now we're back. Even though we're in the bottom of the Amud, we just covered an Amud of Gemara, we're back to square one. What's the source for Rabbi Elazar? Let's remind each other. Rabbi Elazar says that when a person consecrates his ancestral field, his steyachuza, so that land needs an action. Meaning, if nothing happens before Yovel, it doesn't go to the Kohanim. Stay retushim. And that could be, and we can have another Yovel come and go. The man over here now is extraordinarily old. Okay, but still, we can have another Yovel come and go, and it still doesn't return. It doesn't go to the Kohanim. You need an action. Now, okay, so, and we need a source for Rabbi Elazar, as right now, we have a lot of sources for Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. We don't have a source for Rabbi Elazar. Amar Rava, bottom line of Chavav Amar Aleph, Amar Kra, V'haya Hasad V'seiso B'Yovel. But say so, miyad acher. The land needs a yitziah, right? In other words, in Yovel, it has to leave somebody's possession, right? It's simple. I mean, obviously, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon will disagree with this point, but according to Rabbi Elazar, when the pasuk says va'aya hasada bit say so, it needs an exit. Well, exit is only going to be under a scenario where somebody currently has it right now. So if nobody has it, meaning it was consecrated and it's just sitting there in the Gizbar's possession, so it needs to leave somebody's hand. So it just stays there in perpetuity until somebody actually redeems it. Okay. Ibai Elohu. Okay. Gemara now asks the following question. According to Rabbi Elazar, in order for a land to be considered, in order for a land to go to the Kohanim at Yovel, somebody needs to redeem it. Okay. And as we just learned, according to Rabbi Elazar, if nobody redeems it before Yovel, so therefore it just simply stays by the Bedek Abayis. Okay. We're in Yovel cycle number two. Nobody redeemed this land. Along comes the original owner. And the original owner says, I'll redeem the land. Yeah, so right. That's a fair question. I wonder the same thing as well. Meaning, do the sons inherit that right to redeem it back?
Talking about 60 to 80 years.
Yeah, I understand. I totally understand.
And that's why the sons
are. Right. Okay. Good question. Okay. I'd say the next mishnah discusses it, but that's not really true. The next mishnah is going to talk about where the son buys it from the father. So. Okay, I think the answer is no, but I'm not sure. Okay, so now in that second Yovel, according to Rabbi Elazar, along comes back the original owner and says, I want to redeem it. at this point in time now, the question is a very simple question. Who is he? Meaning, we know, I'm not asking in terms of identification. We know exactly who he is. But as he is coming now to redeem, is he redeeming the land now as the original ancestral owner of this land? Or do we say, no, look, Yovel came and go. Once Yovel comes, even though it didn't go to the Kohanim, but you lost it. You lost your rights to your ancestral rights to that property because Yovel came. So the question is, according to Rav Elazar, if Yovel comes and nothing happened to the land and this land is a Sade Ratush, does the original owner lose his ancestral rights to the land? Or no? If nothing happened to the land, we're basically resetting the clock, but vis-a-vis the land, it's still the ancestral owner is still considered the owner of that land. Balim b'yovel sheni ke'acher damu olo. How do we treat him? Like an outsider, like a stranger, or no? Tashma. So the Gemara now is going to go back over Braisa 1 and Braisa 2. And it's going to be the same storyline of the Gemara on side B as it was on side A. Meaning the Gemara thinks that these Braisas address Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara then is going to realize, wait a second, these two Braisas aren't addressing Rabbi Elazar. They're addressing Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. And for whatever reason, the Gemara then goes through the entire sequence of, well, why do I need Braisa number 1? And why do I need Braisa number 2? And what is Braisa number 1 and number 2 teaching me that the other Braisa didn't teach me? And so, stay with me as I'm going to go through these next lines rather quickly. Tashma. Lo yigal lo tehni gal shtei lafanav kistei mikne tamalomer od. Lechmosha haitzayna nigal savan nigal shtei lafanav kistei mikne. After Yovel, it's like a stei mikne. Amos. Now, what are we talking about? Elam of the Yovel. Rishon, are we talking about during this first Yovel? Amayna nigal asachuzanami havya. He's the owner. If he redeems it, he gets to stay by him. We're talking about Yovel Sheni. Ulaman. Now, who is this price addressing? Either Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, or Kohanim Nafka. Now, remember, according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, it goes to the Kohanim and Yovel. Elav le Rabbi Elazar. So the Gemara now at this point is thinking this price is addressing Rabbi Eliezer. And what do you see? That the original owner, when we get to the second Yovel, the second Yovel cycle, is like Acher. He's like somebody else. The Tizbra, now the Gemara says, you think this Braisa is talking about Rabbi Elazar? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, hi od my darshibe. What do Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon do with the word od? El hacha ba ma'iskinan. So the Gemara says, rather, this is the case of Braisa number 1. Good, now we get to review. Besada shiyatza l'kohanim, the field went out to the Kohanim because it went unredeemed by the original owner. Vehikdisha Kohen, then the Kohen was makdish to the land after the Ovo, after he acquired it. And the original owner comes and redeems it. I might have thought that he can't even lease it as a stay mikna. Even though he cannot buy it back as an original owner, he could buy it back as a simple stay mikna, as a leased land. Vahatanya, and in fact, we have another Braisa. Here comes Braisa number 2. Yashav asad l'asher kanam ito yachol yachzor l'gizmer shalach kuhemenu. Tamalam asher lo achuz et ha'aretz. Ma tamalam asher kanam asad deshiyatzel kohanim. Braisa number 2 illustrates the following scenario, where it goes to the kohanim at Yovel, because the original owner who consecrated the land did not redeem it. Umachra kohen, and then the kohen sells it to somebody else. Vihikdisha, and the buyer of that land is makdish the land. Vihikdisha lokeach, vega'ala acher, and somebody else comes along and redeems that land. Yachol tachzor lebalim harishonim. I might have thought now that here we are now coming into Yovel number 2. And Yovel number 2, this land is rebounding to its original owner. I might have thought maybe we should identify the original owner as the owner from before Yovel number 1. Tamalam Lasher Kanahu. Lasher Kanahu says no. Original owner number 1 is no longer owner at all. At all. The Itzrich Lemechtav, and therefore it's going to go to the Kohanim. The Itzrich Lemechtav.
Once it loses its Sede Akuza status, it will no longer regain it for anybody. All it used to
the Mechtav. Correct. The Itzrich Lemechtav Lo Yigal. The Itzrich Lemechtav Lasher Kanahu. And again, the Gemara now is going to go through that same sequence of, why do I need both prices, which are essentially making the same point? In the case of Asher Kanahu, where the land is going back to original owner by Yovel number 2, I might have thought, you know what? Let it go back to the original owner. In Braisa number one, what interesting aspect do we have to look at? The fact that the original owner comes along and he actually is redeeming the land from the Gizbar because the Kohen consecrated the land. I might have thought, well, he was the original owner. He is paying for the land. So let him then therefore reclaim his ancestral rights. And without the word owed, I might have thought that he can't redeem it at all. Okay. Now I get a chance to breathe. Wonderful. So again, let's recap. Okay? Not bad. Let's quickly recap. We have three opinions in the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say that a land in Yovel that when consecrated by the original, by ancestral owner and was not redeemed goes to the Kohanim, period. There is a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon whether or not the Kohanim have to pay for that land, have to buy it from the Beit HaMikdash. But nevertheless, though, aside from that detail, they both agree that it goes to the Kohanim. Rabbi Elazar says no. Rabbi Elazar says that if nobody redeems the land, that land is just simply left as an abandoned field. Good. And that will continue in perpetuity until somebody comes along and redeems the land. Then at Yovel, it's going to go to the Kohanim. The question on the table is the following, the question has not yet been answered. According to Rabbi Elazar, after Yovel number one, what if the original owner comes along and says, "Hi, I'd like to redeem this land"? How do we treat him? Like the original owner or like an outsider? Meaning, the question is basically, does Yovel basically revoke his ancestral rights forever? Okay?
Does he at least have some sort of priority?
Right. The question was asked. I think that answer is coming up later. I think the Gemara later on will address that. Okay. And my Havi Allah. Okay, in the Gemara, more than halfway down the page, my Havi Allah Tashma, Rabbi Elazar Omer Gala Balam Biyovo Sheni Yotzei LaKohanim Biyovo. Brisa says that according to Rabbi Elazar, if the original owner was Goel, so what it was Goel in Yovo Sheni, it goes to the Kohanim in Yovo. Amalei Rabbi LaRav Ashi Anan Lo Tanan Hachi. What do you mean? That's not how we learned it. Rabbi Elazar Omer Eina Kohanim Nechnasam Asocho Achi Ganalenu Acher. You need somebody else to be Goel. Amalei Balam Biyovo Sheni Kacher Damu. What do you mean? After the first Yovel, the original owner, you know what he is? He's Acher. He's like somebody else. Good. So that is version one. Version two. Ika Damer Rabbi Elazar Omer Nigala Gala Biyovo Sheni Eina Yotzei LaKohanim Biyovo. Now, according to version two, just the opposite. The original owner after Yovel is still the original owner. Amalei Rabbi Elazar Omer Nigala Nami Tanina. So he says, good, because we learned the same thing in our Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar Omer Nigala Nechnas Nosocha Ashi Galanu Acher. Amalei Ima Masnis, and he says, no, don't get sidetracked by the Mishnah, because if all I had was the Mishnah, Havamina Balam Yovel Sheni Kacher Damu, because I might have thought that after the first Yovel, the original owner is Acher, he's somebody else. So, Kamash Malan. So that's why, from the Mishnah itself, I can't say anything, but the Braisa, I could certainly say, is saying definitively that even after the first Yovel, he, the original owner, has a chance to redeem it and reclaim his ancestral rights. Interesting, the Gemara version 1, version 2 are two totally opposite versions of one another, and the practical difference, however, is that we don't follow like Rebbe Elazar, so the Gemara does not resolve which one is correct. Okay, bottom line, so if you consecrate your ancestral field and a Yovel comes, you lose the field. It goes to the Kohanim. The only thing left to determine is, do we go like Rabbi Yehuda or like Rabbi Shimon? Meaning, when the Kohanim get the field in Yovel, do they have to pay for the field? So the Rambam follows like Rabbi Yehuda, and that the Kohanim do in fact need to pay for that field. Okay. And then what if the Kohanim don't have money? Whatever the value of the field. Interesting. Do they pay 50 shekel or do they pay actual value?
I think it says in the article, it says 50
Okay. Okay. All right, let's finish up. Let's finish up the perek. Halokeach sade me'aviv. Okay, last mishnah and the last discussion of the perek deals with the following scenario. You buy a piece of property from your father. Okay. Okay, you know after 120 it's coming to you anyway, but right now you'd like to own the field, so you buy the field from your father. Now, when you are, it's so strange, meaning it's a field which you know ultimately you will have ancestral rights to that field. You will be the owner of that field, not as a leaser, but as an owner when dad dies, but right now you just own the field as a stay mikna. Good. We're talking now about the son. And then follow the progression, the sequence over here. Umeis aviv, and then dad dies. So that means that you've owned the field. As a stay achuza. The achar kach hikdisha, and then you consecrate the field. Harehi kistei achuza. So now this field is considered a stay achuza, which means that you have the ability to go back, redeem the land, and retain your ancestral rights to this field. Now, but let's follow this sequence. Higdisha v'achar kach meis aviv. What if you buy a land from your father, you're makdish the land, and then dad dies? You see, when you are makdish the land, how are you makdish the land? Only as a leaser of the land, only as a stay mikna. Now, it's true that once dad dies, You've now gained the land as a stay achuza, but it's out of your possession. It's now in the hands of the gizbar. So now what? Harehi kistei mikna. So now it is not a stay achuza, but it's a stay mikna. Okay. You understand the differences between stay achuza and stay mikna. There basically are three fundamental differences between them. Number one, as a stay achuza, when you redeem it at a fixed rate. As a stay mikna, when you redeem it for its actual value. Although, truth be told, that's subject to a debate later on, but we're going to assume like we're holding like the chachamim that you redeem it at true value. Okay. Correct. But in other words, absolutely correct. But whatever the year is, you're going to buy it back at a prorated fixed value. Right. Now, it's not going to be based on whatever the land is worth. Okay. Number two. Second fundamental difference. Stay achuza, the owner adds chomesh, a surcharge of 25% when he buys back the land, as opposed to a stay mikna, when you redeem the land, you do not add the chomesh. Okay? By a stay achuza, if the stay achuza is consecrated, right, by its ancestral owner, what happens in Yovel? Goes to the Kohanim. Stay Mikne, if it goes unredeemed, what happens to that land? Doesn't go to the Kohanim. It goes back now to the original owner.
Stay Mikne is just a
sentence. Huh? Stay Mikne is a lease.
No, it's a lease.
Correct. And so you understand that when you're makdish the land, it's not really yours. But, okay, fine, you're leasing, but what you are being makdish is the lease. Meaning you're basically saying, this lease that I own, I'm being makdish the lease. Good. And so that, therefore, that means if the original owner consecrates the land, so that goes to the Kohanim, because it's his land to be makdish. If a leaser is makdish land, it doesn't go to the Kohanim, because he wasn't really makdish the land, just the lease. Good. But, right. So in the Mishnah now, Before I started the Mishnah, I should have done that. I should have gone over the three fundamental differences between stay achuza versus stay mikna. Okay, before I start the next parak, I'll do it again. It's important. It's just to make sure that we're clear about the differences. So again, the scenario is like this. You buy a land from your father. Okay, if you first, if dad first dies and then you're makdish, it's a stay achuza. If you are makdish the land and then dad dies, it's a stay mikna. That's Divrei Reb Meir. That's according to Reb Meir. Rabbi Shimon Omrim, Harehi Kistei Achuza. No. That's also a stay achuza. Even if you consecrate the land and then dad dies, it's a stay achuza. Okay? Now, even though at the time of consecration you didn't actually own the land, All you had right now was a lease of the land, but it doesn't matter, according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, because you stand to inherit the land. Shenemar, im mistei miknaso, asher lo mistei achuzaso. The pasuk is funny. The pasuk says, if you are makdish a leased land, and then the Torah goes on to say, a leased land which is not an owned land. Meaning, if it's a leased land, obviously you don't own it. Right? The pasuk says, im mistei miknaso, asher lo mistei achuza, which is not a stei achuza. Meaning, that pasuk is obviously verbose. Okay, this land, since it stands to be a stei achuza, therefore is considered a stei achuza. A stei mikna does not go to the kohanim in Yovel because it's not yours. Meaning when you were makdish to land, you weren't really being makdish to land. All you were being makdish was the lease. Okay. Kohanim and Levim makdishim la'olam. Kohanim and Levim, they can be makdish whenever they want. Okay. V'go'alim la'olam, and they can be go'al forever. Meaning if you're a Kohen or a Levi, and you own a piece of property. Okay. Kohanim owning land? Yeah. Yeah, they inherited it. They got it at Yovel. Okay. So when they are makdish land, for them there's no Yovel. Kohanim and Levim are excused from Yovel. Bein lefnei Yovel, bein la'achra Yovel. Okay. Tan Rabbanan. Let's finish up the parak. Minayin lokech sada me'aviv, v'ktisha v'achar kach meis aviv, minayin shetel afanav kistei achuza, tam olomar v'im, miknaso asher lo mistei achuza, so sada shen ru li ostei achuza, yatsazu shi ru li ostei achuza, divrei Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon. So here in the Braisa just flips. The Braisa starts with Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, which says that as long as you stand to inherit a land, this land for you is called the stei achuza, even though you actually didn't inherit it yet. Rabbi Meir Omer, minayin lelokech stade me'aviv, umeis aviv, v'acharka chikdishu, minayin shetel afanav kistei achuza. Now the Braisa goes over the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Now according to Rabbi Meir, the sequence is, you bought the land from your father, then dad dies, and then you're makdish the field. Okay? And that is considered, under that circumstance, that's considered stei achuza. And how does Rav Meir know that? Interesting. Rav Meir is going to turn to the same exact pasuk. The im is stei miknaso, asher lo mistei achuza. Sada sheino sada achuza, yatsuzu shi stei achuza. Okay. Now, it's interesting. Because both according to Rav Meir and according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, they both learn out that when a son purchases a field from his father, that field to a certain degree is called the stei achuza. But what they're arguing about is what exactly is the circumstance? According to Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, even if you're makdish the field and then dad dies, it's considered a stei achuza. According to Rabbi Meir, no. First, dad needs to die. I know that's a terrible sentence, but just don't take it out of context. First, dad needs to die, and then you're makdish the field. Then and only then is it considered a stei achuza. Okay. And they're both learning out from the same pasuk. So there must be some sort of underlying debate taking place over here. So the Gemara now wants to suggest, what's the underlying debate? Lema b'haka miflagi. The Rameir savra kinyan peros ki kinyan aguftami. The Rameir is of the opinion that when you buy rights to a field, what the Gemara calls kinyan peros. Kinyan peros means you didn't buy the field, but you bought the rights to the field, which is what the son did from the father. I mean, when son goes over to dad and says, dad, do me a favor. I'd like to buy that field. He's not really buying the field. It's dad's field. He's buying rights to the field. So kinyan peros ki kinyan agufdami. It is tantamount. It's like he's buying the field itself. And Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Shimon, sarvi kinyan peros lav ki kinyan agufdami. And Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are of the opinion that kinyan peros is not considered kinyan aguf. And what the Gemara now is suggesting is that this is the undercurrent, the underlying debate between the two of them. And so therefore, look at Rashi number one of the Gemara. Rav Meir Sava Kinyan Peres Shahaisa Kinu Yalo Leven Lechayev Leparis Lechola Peres Velo Lugufei Shari Asa Lachzor B'Yovel Ki Kinyan Gufta Mihilkach Ki Meis Aviv Ashalo Higdisha. That means like this. If dad dies before he was makdish the property, Ilo Ashmin and Krad did to have a kiste achuza, have a mina lav ste achuza he, Meaning, dad's death didn't really change anything. Because with dad dying, the son already purchased the rights to the field, and Rav Meir holds kinyan haperos ke kinyan haguf. So dad's death didn't really do anything in terms of changing the status. What the Torah is now coming to introduce is, no, son now is no longer considered a leaser of the land. Son now is considered an owner of the land. Good. This is Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say, no, kinyan haperos is lavka kinyan haguf tami, which means that when you buy rights to the land, that's all you have. All you have is rights. So when dad dies, what happens now? A full transfer of ownership goes from the father down to the son. So in a scenario where the son was mocked, sorry, the son bought the field from dad, and then dad dies. So there, I don't need a pasuk. I get it. From that point forward now, the son is the owner of the land. If the Torah is coming to introduce a new concept, what's the new concept? Even if he was makdish land before dad dies, and then dad dies, it's still, from the son's perspective, considered a stay achuza.
I mean, this is a complicated factor that the son has to be the only son. Right?
Presumably.
And then there is no
she would right. Okay. All fair points. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman, Yitzchak Ben Amar, Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Yehuda, Kinyan Peros, Kinyan Haguf Dam. The Gemara says, no. Both are of the opinion that Kinyan Peros is Kinyan Haguf. V'hacha kra ashkach v'darsha. The Gemara says the subject of the debate between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon versus Rabbi Meir is simply how to understand a pasuk. Lichtov rachmana im b'stei miknaso, asher lo stei achuzaso, inami asher lo stei achuza, mai misa de achuzaso, sada shen rui li yosada achuza, yatsuzu shen rui lo stei achuza. Meaning the Gemara says there's no fundamental undercurrent in terms of the machlokas between the two. The machlokas is just simply darshaning of the pesukim. Finally, hakohanim v'alevim makdishim la'olam bishlam ha'goalam mitzvah la'afukim edisor de lo parke. So the Gemara says, look, the Mishnah told us a very big chiddush in terms of Kohen Levi. Kohen Levi can always redeem their land even after Yovel, as opposed to Yisrael, who after Yovel loses the land. Good. Lo parke ela ad Yovel. Kamash v'alam dekohen of levim go'alam la'olam. That's wonderful. Elamakdishin, my ear, your coin of Levima, Felisa Anami. However, then the Mishnah makes another statement that if you're coin Levi, you can consecrate your land whenever you want. Okay. But so can a Yisroel. Meaning that line of the Mishnah seems to, first of all, not be teaching us anything new, and seems to be a little bit misleading. Meaning, and a Yisroel can't be Makdish land whenever he wants? Sure he could. So now Vichitem Abishnah Sayova Asma. Maybe the Chiddush of the Mishnah is like this. How about during the Yovel year? Maybe the point of the Mishnah is that during the Yovel year, the Kohen and the Levi can be Makdish and Yisrael can't. Now, if you remember, right? That was a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel in the beginning of the Perek. Right? The first sugya of the Perek on Chav Dalad is a machlokas between Rav and Shmuel. Can you and I, meaning Yisraelim, can we be Makdish land during the Yovel year? So, Hanich, L'Shmuel, Damar, Bishnah, Seyova, Asma, Lo Kacha. So come mashmalan dekwan of living makdishim la'olam. So that I can understand according to Shmuel, perfect. There is a differentiation between Kohen versus Yisroel. El Rav, my ear, yekwan of living, my Yisroel nami. But if you remember, the position of Rav was even Yisroel could be makdish land during the Shemit, during the Yovel year. Ula tamech ben lifnei Yovel ben lacha Yovel lamali. El I did the tana reish lifnei Yovel lacha Yovel tana sefer nami ben lacha Yovel ben lifnei Yovel. The Gemara finally says, you know what? Symmetry. Like so many times, like so many answers to the question, why did the Mishnah say that? Sometimes the Mishnah enjoys the symmetry. So over here, you're right. There is no particular point being made regarding a Kohen being Makdish land. A Yisrael could be Makdish land whenever he wants. The point is regarding symmetry. The Kohen can be goal of the land whenever he wants, and that's not true by Yisrael. After Yovel, Yisrael loses the land forever. Hajolach in Makdishim, that's the end of the seventh parak of Erechim. God willing, tomorrow we begin the eighth parak.